The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Well, hey, thanks for joining me. It's good to hang out with you. We've got about an hour left. If you missed any of the great conversation we've had today or any of the shows, you ought to check out our podcast. You can find them on Spotify, on Apple. You can find them at relevantradio.com. Just do a quick search for my name. And Maggie normally has the broadcast of the day up, maybe about an hour after we're off the air. But you can go back, man. We had some awesome conversations about about loss and suffering and, you know, all the issues of the day. I mean, you'll find something very different here. We'll talk about everything from, you know, health and finance to politics to UFOs, you name it. You never know what you're going to get. In fact, I want to play for you a little bit more audio from Jonathan Toomey. That's coming up in a minute. But if you're on hold, Donna, I'll grab you and a few other calls as well here. If you want to join us, feel free to sound off at 888-914-9149. You can always join the conversation. Evil always seems more powerful than it is. And I was just talking to Dr. Thierfelder about that. The bottom line is this. You know, the media is a megaphone, right? And it amplifies the voice of these radical and these woke ideologies. But it's not as big. It's not as dominant. It's not as strong. It's not what it pretends to be. It really isn't. I think there's a lot of good people, a lot of good hearts that are out there. Jonathan Rumi, who is an actor in the series Chosen, I have yet to see this, but I've heard nothing but rave reviews about it. He was another one of these speakers at the March for Life. And he gave, they say, a very powerful and impassioned speech. He talked about the worthiness and the noblest cause possible. He talked about evil. He talked about the media. He talked about a lot of things. Let me share a little bit of what he had to say with you right now. I think you'll enjoy this.
God is real. But just as God is real, Satan is also real. And I'm not talking about the simplistic cartoon of some dude with horns and a tail. I'm talking about the father of lies, the great deceiver, the diabolical slanderer who pushes you to doubt when you know in your heart the right thing to do. And he is not about to give up this fight either. In fact, he's doubling down because guess what? His time is limited. So he's throwing everything that he has at the world and all of us in it. And countless are being deceived as a result. But that's his job. He wants your and my destruction. He wants us to believe that abortion does not harm us individually and as a society. So please, I beg of you, pray for those who do not have the faith, the strength, the clarity of purpose that you here do. People ask me, how do you try to emulate Jesus in your own life when playing him? Well, loving my enemies, praying for those who persecute me and those who may protest me is the first place that I have to start. But remember, my dear friends, we know how the story ends. God won. He won, and Christ reminds us that he is with us until the end of the age. And that said, we need to take a quick glance into the mirror of culture, which communicates a few concerns about where we are as a society that I'd like to propose a couple of thoughts about for your consideration, if I may. For some time now, we have been witnesses to a mounting polarity between light and dark. We've seen it manifest itself in many facets of culture. But I would like to address it as I see it as an artist in the entertainment industry. In the last several years, there's been a sharp and disturbing increase in the darkness of the imagery being used in film, television, and music. The landscape has become increasingly sinister. And in some cases, even demonic in tone, more so than in previous years, sometimes subliminal, oftentimes overt. Storylines involving the occult, witchcraft, demons, and even satanic elements are commonplace in mainstream programming. Many feature spiritually and psychologically disturbing content. The youngest of us and the most vulnerable, as well as those who are not grounded in a solid faith in God, are susceptible to the influences of these images. Media has become a portal to behavior and attitudes kids want to emulate that reject God, reject the light, and reject ultimately all those aspects of community which give life. I have observed God subtly but radically being removed from popular culture over the last couple of decades, replaced with some of the most corruptive images and ideologies for young hearts and minds. And any of us who profess any kind of faith are branded as fundamental or condemned for their beliefs with the assertions of the religiosity of a Pharisee. This is completely contrary to what it means to have a relationship with Jesus Christ and follow his teachings. If only the rest of the world actually took the time to explore what it means to follow Jesus' heart. Yes, there are always individual exceptions, unfortunately, but for the majority of believers, God is love, and true love gives way to life, not death. The only way to empower yourself is to believe in the greatness of who you are, flaws and all, the gifts you bring into this world that God freely gave you, the uniqueness of your precious life, and to share them with one another. That is your legacy. That is your power. That is who you are meant to be, and that is how you will change the world. Do not let mainstream media's shallow depictions of sexuality and sexual irresponsibility deceive you into thinking that such an approach to love and relationships is without consequences. It isn't. And this is part of the systemic issue that brings us here today. I know how difficult it can be to think differently, to swim against the current, to choose life in a culture that celebrates death. How can you make a difference? Number one, pray the rosary. St. Padre Pio said the greatest weapon against the devil we have is the rosary. Try it. See for yourself. I don't need to sell it. God doesn't need me to sell anything. Secondly, examine and expose the areas of darkness in your world, in your community, in your immediate society that need your light and bring it everywhere you go. Change the culture by impacting the culture. Raise your voice. Vote with your resources, financial, spiritual, and temporal. But we are not alone. He has lived as one of us, and that brings us into communion with him. By honoring the life that God gave you, by bringing your gifts to the world with love and compassion, you will be creating an environment of holiness which the most impressionable in our society will draw their examples from, and to help rewire the attitudes of society's collective consciousness, steering it back towards the preservation and value of life, restoring respect for faith and true religious tolerance, and healing some of our beloved nation's wounds in the process, while hopefully planting us more deeply within God's grace. It's been an honor to be with you here. Thank you for inviting me. God bless you.
Yeah, it's Jonathan Rumi from The Chosen. I loved what he had to say. I think a lot of truth there. And I think he's right, that call to prayer, especially the rosary. It's so refreshing to hear that, right? That was to, you know, the movement for life in our country is not a Catholic thing. It's really, it's a, Catholic means universal. It is a universal thing, but there's a lot of non-Catholics, a lot of other people there. And I love when I hear my Catholic faith being espoused and some of these real powerful secrets, like the rosary. I think the rosary can change the world. I really do. That and the chaplet are two of my favorite prayers I just love to hear what he had to say. Donna in northern New Jersey, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Hi there.
Hey. Go right ahead, Donna. Good to have you.
I was just listening and reflecting on the verb, abort. Mm-hmm. Most of the time you hear it used in conjunction with a pilot aborting a takeoff or aborting a landing, but in either case, it's the cessation of something that has already begun. So calling abortion health care is a gross misnomer.
Yeah. Well,
you are calling an end to something which has already begun. And what do you call stopping of life? Murder? Manslaughter?
Right.
It's definitely not health care.
Well, you know something, Donna, you're breaking up a little bit with yourself. I apologize for that. It's kind of hard to hear with you, but I think you bring up a great point, and it goes to something I've been saying for a long time. I think words are very powerful, right? They are. And you take the verb abort, and you say that it means to stop something that is already done or in progress. That's the perfect word for what they're doing, right? Aborting a human being. But they don't look at that. They redefine words. We take a look at the nomenclature of the culture of death and even of our current culture. Take a look at the wokeism that has infiltrated the country and our schools. It's all done through language. They take terms, even these acts that our legislators are putting forward. They're misnomers, all of them. They're deceptions. They're deceptive. Right? Inflation Reduction Act and Reproductive Rights Act and all these different things that they have out there, they're lies. Who's the great deceiver? Right? Just think about that. Who is the great deceiver? Take a look at the language of the great deceiver. It's deceptive. I see the same thing. When you advance a culture of death, when you want to indoctrinate children, when you want to advance things that are antithetical to God, clearly see whose fingerprints are all over. Hey, I've got to take a short pause here. When I come back, though, I want to tell you about something else. I don't know if you've been to confession a long time. I know a lot of people don't like to go to confession. Who does, right? I do. I try to go at least every 2 weeks, and I think it's really healthy. Some of the great saints went every day, right? There's a lot of people that go once a week. But one of the things that I think is really telling, it's another one of those sacraments that Satan hates more than anything else. I just saw a story, and I want to talk to you about this. I'm going to put it at least on your radar just for a quick minute here, where the seal of confession is coming under attack again. It's now in the crosshairs once more, and it's happening in a state here in our union. I'll tell you what's happening, where it's being attacked, and more right after this.
We go there. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hi, Drew Mariani here. Hey, this September, I'm heading the Relevant Radio's Eucharistic Revival Pilgrimage to Italy with Nativity Pilgrimage. This is available to you. Information available at relevantradio.com/Italy.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's fun hanging out with you. Thanks for being here. I'm going to grab a call or two if you want to join me. It's 888-914-9149. I'll tell you a little bit about the seal of confession coming up, what's happening there. And here's something else that's really telling. Are younger Catholic priests becoming more conservative? Did Nancy Pelosi really go ahead and call a priest to exorcise her home? We'll fill you in on that and a whole lot more. But first, Barbara is listening to us in North Liberty, Iowa. Barbara, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon. I listened to his Jonathan's speech on Saturday in its entirety. And what was so impressive, and I've been following him since 2020 with The Chosen, he does not stop and talk about the Catholic Church, just the Catholics. He right. tells it to everybody. He mentioned the Rosary and Padre Pio. There were other faiths that were there that might start thinking about that. And he's often attacked on social media when he does the Rosary or the Divine Mercy chaplet. And he explains so much about our faith that it's just beautiful, and he's such a beautiful man.
Yeah, and I love what he had to say. I mean, and it's the reason I played it. I know the march is over, but, it's, you know, Rumi, he spoke about the spiritual battle that's taking place in U.S. society over abortion, and he cautioned really the young, which I think is so important, to take their faith seriously, you know, in the face of this resistance, because they're the ones that are really the most malleable. They're the ones who are being targeted. They're the ones who are really being indoctrinated. And he says Satan
and
wants you to...
the future.
Yeah, he says Satan wants you to believe that abortion is not harmful. He wants you to believe that lie, right? And they're so ripe for corruption. And then he said something that we don't talk about ever, Barbara, and that's that God is real, and so is Satan. If you believe in God, then you really got to believe in Satan as well. So, yeah, I was impressed by him. I'm going to have to get him on the radio with me. I'll have to have a conversation with him here.
I sent that to you a year or so ago because he's amazing.
Yeah, somebody else just sent it to me, too. I don't know if it was you or somebody else, but yeah, somebody else suggested getting him on. So we'll reach out to him.
Well, thank you for all you do.
Thank you, Barbara. Good talking with you there in Iowa.
Take care.
God bless you. North Liberty. All right, Cindy in Traverse City, Michigan. Hi, how are you?
Good. Ooh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to ask you that. I have a comment, you know, about how they want us to go green and brick, and they're worried about the environment and all that. But we've aborted generations to come.
Yeah, Cindy, I'm sorry.
There's not going to be anybody left.
I'm having a lot of difficulty hearing you because I think it's your cell phone. But to your point, you're right. I mean, we have unfortunately terminated generations to come. We really haven't. It's a great loss and a great tragedy. We have a lot of societal issues and, you know, population. That life is a blessing on so many different levels. You feel free to call back another time. I just couldn't really make out everything you had to say there, so my apologies. Bishop Papaki is going to be joining me here, and I want to get to him. There's another issue here that I just want to put on your radar, and that has to deal with confession. It seems like, I'm an observer. I say this all the time. I try to look at trends. I try to see what's happening in the church, whether or not it's attacks and vandalism or it's other movements in the culture. There's something that comes up that I wish I could ignore, and one of those are these stories over and over again that seem to continue to rise where the church is coming under fire from the state, and they want to attack the seal of confession. There was a state senator in Vermont, one of the most, of course, secularized states in our country. This senator is proposing a bill, and he wants to remove the exemption for clergy as mandatory reporters of child sex abuse if the information is learned through a privileged or confidential communication. Now, this comes up over and over again. Church will never, ever change its positions on this. But this was just a little history for you. It was in response to an Associated Press's investigation, and I use that term loosely. They found that 33 states don't require disclosure of a case where of abuse if it's learned in the confessional. You know, or some similar kind of circumstance. And according to the AP, over the past two decades, lawmakers across the country have proposed, I think the number I saw was 130 bills in which they're trying to seek a way to create or amend child sex abuse reporting laws. And they all either targeted the loophole or they failed to close it or amend the mandatory reporting statute without touching clergy privilege amid, you know, what is intense opposition from religious groups. But something like this happened in California. We talked about it. A bill was proposed. Remember that? A very serious wall of opposition coming mostly from Catholics. And they dropped the bill. They dropped the bill. Now, whether or not Catholics in Vermont will be able to mount the same kind of opposition, that's a whole nother story, you know, given the Green Mountain State's religious demographics and their history. But that means that there's still 17 states that require clergy to report sexual abuse, even if it's heard in the confessional or confessional-like setting. And what that tells me is that, look, if you go to confession in one of those states, if what you say is between you and God and the priest, the state wants to demand that they be allowed to have a listening ear or at least have the priest report it. The problem is this is never going to happen. Right. This will. I just want you to know that when you hear these stories, I don't want you to be afraid to go to confession. This will never, ever happen. Never. And I want to talk maybe about this clergy penitent privilege. You may not be aware of it. I've invited Bishop Thomas Papaki, the Bishop of Springfield, Illinois, to join us. He's a canon lawyer as well and a very gifted author. Your Excellency, it's good to have you with me today. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew.
Yeah, I hate
to be with you.
Thank you. I hate these stories. I see them come up all the time. And yeah, there's people who haven't been to confession in a long time, or there might be people who think, oh my gosh, I really want to go, but I would not want somebody, you know, revealing what I just told that priest. And when you hear these stories, it undermines in some respects that clergy penitent privilege, even though it doesn't, because I know the priests, you know, by penalty of excommunication, they would never reveal something like that. But give me your take on why we're seeing this. It's just a lack of understanding on the part of the legislature, legislators. How do you read these reoccurring stories?
Well, it's nothing new, as you pointed out. I mean, this has been floated in a number of jurisdictions, a number of states across the United States, and not just in the United States. There was a pretty famous attempt in Australia in 2017, where they had the Royal Commission, as it was called, Royal Commission into Institutional Responses to Child Sexual Abuse, recommended that Australian law require their priests divulge authorities any information about the sexual abuse of children communicated to them while ministering the sacrament. The Archbishop of Sydney, Archbishop Anthony Fisher, was very strong in his statements opposing this. He said, if I quote him, I believe the spiritual encounter between a penitent and God must remain inviolable, and that Catholic priests and penitents should not be threatened with criminal offense for practicing their religion. But then he also points out the proposal to abolish the confessional seal will help no child. We should focus on measures that will really protect children. I fully support every effort by the Royal Commission and others to do that. I think he summed it up very well there. I think this perhaps well-intentioned efforts to try to help prevent child sex abuse, but as Archbishop Fisher pointed out, I agree with him, it's really a futile attempt to do that. For one, no priest is going to violate the seal of confession. I don't know how often this sin is confessed to begin with, but even if it is, canon law is very clear on this. Canon 1388 says that a confessor who directly violates the sacramental seal incurs, in Latin, latae sententiae. That means automatic excommunication, automatically excommunicated, and that excommunication is reserved to the apostolic see. So I think in most cases, I'd say every case, I don't know any priest that would violate the seal. He would rather go to jail than to violate the seal of confession and face excommunication.
Yeah, it's something I hope everyone understands and recognizes. And the only way a priest, if he ever did this, could be the excommunication could be lifted. He had to have that from the Pope. Am I correct in that?
That's right. That's what it means when it's reserved to the Apostolic See, is that he'd be excommunicated, which means he could no longer function as a priest. And in fact, could not receive Holy Communion himself.
It's
a very serious penalty.
And priests understand that. I've talked in the past many times about stories of priests who've gone to their martyrdom over defending the seal. And I think that's really important for people to understand. Right now, my count, there are 17 states that don't acknowledge the priest penitent privilege in one fashion or another. So, you know, no priests in those states have been prosecuted. And I can't imagine it happening. I don't know how they would find out what was confessed in the confessional anyway. How do they hope to, I don't know, somehow surveil this, if you understand what I'm saying? I mean, how do you monitor this if the priest isn't going to tell and the person who confessed is going to tell? How are you going to, you know, how does it come to light?
Well, I mean, that's a very sound point there. I mean, in terms of the effectiveness of this and the fact that not only would nobody know about it, but I think even if somehow this came to light where, you know, the penitent somehow confessed to authorities, I confessed this to a priest in confession, and then the authorities went after the priest to verify that. Again, he wouldn't do that. But yeah. I think the other issue is I don't know that prosecutors would want to prosecute this.
Yeah.
You know, I think that our understanding of the Catholic Church is not just a person confessing sins to another person. The priest is acting in persona Christi, we say, in the person of Jesus Christ. The penitent is there not to just talk over this with like a counselor,
right. But
confessing the sin and receiving absolution from God through the priest. That, you know, Jesus said to Peter and the apostles, I give you the keys. Whatever you bind in heaven is, whatever you bind on earth is bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth is loosed in heaven. So the priest is acting on behalf of our Lord, not just as a human being.
Yeah, that's really true. I mean, St. Faustina writes about this in her diary, and the Lord tells her, and one of my favorite things is, he says, when you approach the confessional, know this, he says, it is I myself who am waiting for you. I'm only hidden by the priest, but it's I that work in your soul. It's I that act in your soul. And it's where, you know, the misery of the soul meets the mercy of God. And Faustina wrote about this. She had her own encounters where she'd see the priest. And that's really a great point that you're there in persona Christi. I hope people would understand that. Why do you think no one takes advantage of this sacrament? I mean, it's such a liberating, freeing, and healing sacrament. I know a man who's struggling with pornography. And I said to him, I said, you know, another guy who's also struggling with anxiety. And two separate guys. And my advice to both of them, first and foremost, was to get to confession. They haven't been there in a long time. Because I think sometimes a lot of our sickness is also rooted in the spiritual. And, you know, when they're able to receive those graces, it can help them rise above temptation, and it can also bring the healing that they need. But why do you think it's so underutilized?
Well, I think you're dealing with oftentimes just people feel ashamed to go to confession. They think the priest is going to think badly of them if they confess, especially if it's a serious sin. But I have to tell you, we priests have heard just about everything. You know, nothing a penitent is going to say, first of all, is going to shock the priest. And then secondly, priests are very compassionate in confession. You're not going to get chewed out. The priests are going to be, my experience is that the priests are going to be very happy that you've come to seek forgiveness. They're going to be compassionate. They're going to do everything they can to make you feel that your relationship is restored. That's why we call it a reconciliation. You'd be reconciled with God and not be treated harshly or be reprimanded and be or chased out of the confessional or anything like that. And I think those of us who do go to confession frequently find that it is such a freeing experience, you know, to have that burden of sin lifted from you. And then you feel like you have a fresh start. And you can start over again without having this burden weighing you down.
Yeah, you know, what I love about it, and again, I'm a big devotee of St. Faustina. I mean, one of the things that the Lord told her, too, he says, you know, we're a soul like a decaying corpse, so that from a human standpoint, there was no hope of restoration, and everything already seemed lost. The Lord said, it's not so with God. It is here in this miracle of mercy, the miracle of divine mercy restores the soul in full. He says, it is in this sacrament that the greatest miracles take place, and they repeatedly take place, or incessantly repeated, I think is the word he used. I love that. The greatest miracles take place, and they're incessantly repeated. What can we do? Because here's the problem I've always had. I see nobody in line for confession, and I don't want to be disparaging, but I see very long lines for communion. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Maybe we need more confession times, you know, maybe we need to make it more amenable, because sometimes I went to confession before Christmas too. And I remember going there. It's like, I never saw so many people in church before waiting for confession. It's like they all came out for this particular day. But do we need more times? I mean, how do we approach this? I know the church right now is working on this revitalization of the Eucharist campaign. They want to get love and greater devotion for that sacrament. But I think the sacrament of reconciliation goes hand in hand with that.
Well, I agree that availability is an important part of it. You know, I've made it a point to encourage my priest to make sure that you have very generous times posted. And it's not just what I saw some years ago. At least in my diocese, I don't see this too much anymore, where they say confession by appointment only,
yes,
you know, and call
right.
me. Well, that's really going to turn people off.
Yeah, no one's going
to. So when you have that, like here at our cathedral, we have confession times every day. We have an evening mass every day.
Awesome.
At 5:15. We have confessions for an hour before that.
Wow.
And we have long lines of people because they
That's
know
great.
You can come to our cathedral and go to confession. And so the priests who say, well, you know, I sit in the confessional and nobody comes. Well, bring a book with you. Bring your rosary.
Right.
You know, a lot of us are happy to have some quiet time to pray. And if nobody comes, well, that, at least you use that as a prayer time. But, you know, if people know you're going to be sitting there, available, they will start to come. And then I think also the more often people go, the better an experience it is for them. You know, if you wait every 5-10 years, well, then it becomes so daunting to say, oh my goodness, I've got to try to think of all my sins over this long period of time. But if you go frequently, and I would say at least once a month, I try to go twice a month myself personally.
Yep.
But the more often you go, then it also helps you to avoid those sins. And that's a big part of going to confession is being forgiven. We're supposed to have a sense of contrition, of being sorry, but then what we call a firm purpose of amendment, not to commit that sin again. And if we don't have that, in fact, then the priest should not give absolution if he just gets the sense like, you know, you're not really contrite, you're just kind of going through the motions here. Well, you know, but if we do confess frequently, and, you know, part of it is even our own, dealing with this is like getting tired of maybe repeating the same sins over and over again and say, you know what, I'm going to go to a confession a week from now, and I don't want to have to confess this sin again. And then make that, I think that it actually, the frequency of confession actually helps us to avoid those sins in the future.
Yeah, and I think it's such a great conversation. I'm so happy to hear you have that confession for that period of time. It's funny, the churches that do have confession every day, people show up and they do attend. You know, those that have mass, people will come, open the doors, and then they will certainly be there. You know, and I'll open the phones. I only have His Excellency Bishop Opraki with me for a few minutes. If you want to get in, you'll have to make your call now. I'll try to grab a call or two. The number's 888-914-9149. You can call now. It's 888-914-9149. In terms of confession, I was going to talk more about the seal than confession. I'm glad we're talking about this, though, today. The use of screens in the confessional. There was a period of time where a lot of people went face-to-face. How do you view that? Do you think the anonymity, the privacy of the screen is perhaps more welcoming than the face-to-face, or both mutually good? How do you see that?
I think both are good. I've my own experience hearing confessions, which I do from time to time here at the cathedral, I do it myself. The majority of people tend to prefer going behind the screen, especially if they know it's the bishop hearing confessions, that they would rather go behind the screen. But I do have people that will just, we have a reconciliation room with the screen, but then there's an option to come and sit down face to face. And a number of people choose that. They just feel more comfortable being able to talk face to face and have it more of a conversation. But I fully respect people that want to use the screen and want to have their privacy. And if that helps encourage them to go to confession, to say, you know what, I really have a sin. I'm ashamed of this sin. I don't want the priest to know who I am. Well, then by all means, go to confession and use the screen.
Is there ever a case where absolution can be withheld?
Yes. It's very rare, but you would have, as I said, the person has to be contrite and a firm purpose of amendment. Right. And, I guess if you did have somebody that was, the confessor knew this person, the penitent was coming in regularly confessing the same sin, like almost every day, and just the sense, well, he or she's going to commit this sin and feels like, well, I'll do this sin and then I'll go get it forgiven and I can commit the sin again. In that case, the priest would have to say, you know what, I'm questioning your sincerity here. If you're just, you're feeling like, well, if you're getting forgiven is almost like giving you permission to do it again, and I'll just come back in tomorrow.
Gotcha.
As I said, it's very rare, but that would be an example of a case where a priest would say, you know what, I just don't know that you're really sincere about this. Maybe come back in a couple of days and we'll
gotcha.
See it, how sincere you are about it.
That sounds great. Hey, Your Excellency, thank you. Thanks for the time. As always, it's good to talk to you. Any new books coming out?
Well, I'm working on the commentary. The new Code of Canon Law is going to be coming out this year with a new commentary. The last one came out from the Canon Law Society of America in 2020. So we're 20-some years past that. So that'll be good. And then I've been asked to do a book by Tan Books on St. Francis de Sales.
All right.
And tomorrow is his feast day, in fact. And I have an affinity for St. Francis de Sales. I was named a bishop on January 24th of 2003. So tomorrow will be my 20th anniversary of being named a bishop.
Wow.
So a special affinity for St. Francis de Sales.
Happy anniversary. I went to my Catholic grade school was St. Francis de Sales.
So, oh, great.
The gentleman saint, right? That's great.
Yes. Well, and he wrote his Introduction to the Devout Life, a very wonderful book about how all people, no matter your state in life, whatever your job or occupation, we're all called to holiness, not just priests and sisters.
Amen. I love that. Part of my own philosophy. Hey, Bishop, Your Excellency, thank you for being here. Always a great conversation. I hope you do you're doing well, and I look forward to next time we talk, okay?
You're welcome. God bless you and your listeners.
God bless you. That's His Excellency, Bishop Thomas Poprocki. Of course, he has been a great friend of this radio program and a relevant radio house from Springfield, Illinois. And say a prayer for him. All right, say a prayer for the mission that God has given. Satan has special enmity, I think, for our bishops and especially for our priests. So keep them in your prayers. I want to touch on one other issue very quickly here, and Father Paul Solons will be stopping by. I want to talk about church attendance. Have you looked at your church lately? Are numbers up or are they down? Have you gotten a sense? You know, ever since COVID, attendance at church has fallen, I think sometimes dramatically, and doesn't matter, you know, what church you're talking about. There aren't a whole lot of people coming anymore. And, of course, the numbers are going to vary from location and denomination to denomination. I saw a report today that our Protestant brothers and sisters, their church numbers are down. The British newspaper, The Guardian, they reported that Lifeway research showed about 4,500 Protestant churches closed in 2019. 3,000 new churches opening the same year, so there's a big loss there. But, of course, we're also talking about a fluid situation in a lot of the Protestant churches, a little bit different than the Catholics. But there was a recent survey done by the Survey Center on American Life, and they found about 3% fewer Americans are going to church these days. And that's down from the pre-pandemic. And we're seeing those numbers continue. Most of the people who aren't going the report found are young, and that's really tragic. We're losing this next generation. Only 58% of young adults report the same level of religious attendance in spring of 2022 as they did a couple years earlier. Only 58%. Nearly one in three young adults are attending religious services less often today. That's tragic. Those are terrible, terrible numbers. 12% are more active, but overwhelmingly we're seeing the young exit the church. On the other hand, 3/4 of seniors are still going. And of course, the question is, what do we do? How do we counteract that? How do you get numbers back into the church? It's not necessarily a number game, but I think confession, we just talked about that. I think having, you know, that sacrament available, the mass, good preaching. I think there's a lot of things we can do, but as Catholics, we're called to evangelize. And you and I have got to live our faith outside the walls of that church, right outside the walls of the building. And by our witness, I think it'll draw people back to the church, back to our Lord, back to the sacramental life. I'm joined today by Father Paul Solons. He is an emeritus professor of sociology at Catholic University in Washington, D.C., a senior research associate at the Ruth Institute, and he's a sociologist, so I'd love to get his take on a lot of this. Father, you're a number guy. These numbers surprise you at all?
I'm the number one number guy right now. Just maybe not that. What is surprising about this recent decline due to the pandemic is that it's a broad decline across the board. We are in a long-term decline of participation in religion, particularly the Christian religion in the United States. It's been dropping for the last 30 years or so, and most of the losses have not been to other religions. It's been losses to, as you call them, the nuns, the persons of no religious affiliation and no particular faith. That's continuing, but it had a bump during the COVID era that kind of increased the decline. And the unhappy part of it is that the decline was greater among those who are old than it was among younger folk, middle-aged folk. Usually, you see that the youngest Americans are leaving religion, and particularly leaving the Christian faith, and particularly leaving the Catholic faith, because it puts them at odds with the culture of their peer group. And they find that religion is intolerant and sometimes hateful, and they don't want to consider themselves to be part of something like that. So that's a long-term decline. But during the COVID pandemic, we had a continued decline among the young. We dropped 10 percentage points among those who are 65 and older, this survey found. And 10 percentage points also among those under 35, only 4 percentage points for those between those two goalposts. So it was a decline that is surprising and in some ways more harmful than the long-term decline. Now, is it going to come back? Are we springing back? I think that there is some slow increase, but, you know, the ones who are still most afraid to gather in public with other persons are those older folk. I should say us older folk, because I'm 69, but that is something that may not come back 100%. And most churches today have not bounced back completely to the attendance that they had before the pandemic. We're not sure what's going to happen. A lot of folk have gotten the idea that, you know, turning on the mass on the TV in the morning is as good as going to mass. And that's that's a difficult attitude to break. I know I've seen this among a number of people. And so it's going to take some time to come back.
Yeah. Well, Father, hold the thought. I'm going to take a short break. When I come back, we'll talk a little bit more. My final pause of the show. And all my final segment will be on the other side. So if you want to join the conversation, share your observations, your views, ask your question, it's always good to talk with you. The number, 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Our conversation with Father Paul Solons continues right after this.
We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, thanks for joining me. I'll go to the phones, grab a few of your calls. I wish I could hang out with you longer. I'll be back, though, again tomorrow. Same time, you can catch me on the Pacific Coast starting at 12 noon to 3 Pacific. On the East Coast, go Eagles, right? Sorry to you Giant fans out there. That was a tough weekend for you. For the football fans all across the country. We start 3 to 6 in the Central Time Zone. Of course, 2 to 5, and you can catch the podcast anywhere. Just a really quick programming note before we get back into our conversation. I'm heading on a Catholic pilgrimage. Relevant Radio is running a Eucharistic revival tour. And I love it. I love the idea. We're going to go in hunt of a number of different Eucharistic miracles. And, of course, we're going to go to Rome and see the Eternal City and the Sistine Chapel and have a papal audience and do all that fun stuff. But we're also going to see the gorgeous Italian countryside and have a chance to pray together and play together and be together. And I know how quickly those trips fill up. The last one that went to Israel, they had a waiting list. So, you know, the trip runs in September. If you want information, simply go to relevantradio.com. And is it slash Italy, Maggie? Yeah, relevantradio.com/Italy. You can get the information. But if you want to talk to somebody, Nativity Pilgrimage is running it, and they will go ahead and they'll give you all the details on what we're going to see and where we're going to go. And you got plenty of time to save before September rolls around. So I hope you can join me, and my wife Kathy's going to be going, and who knows who else from Relevant Radio, too. I'm hoping we'll bump into Father Rocky, and we'll see what happens. But I hope you can join us. So check it out, relevantradio.com/Italy. All right. If you're just joining me, Father Paul Solons joins me. You know, I love to tap into the expertise of the Ruth Institute. You've heard Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris on the program. Father Solons is a Catholic priest. He's a convert to the faith. He's married and taught sociology at Catholic U for a while. And now he's the research associate at Ruth. Hey, let me give a quick plug for the Ruth Institute, if we could. I mean, I don't know if a lot of people are familiar with these institutes. Fill us in on what you do there, and then we'll jump into the phones.
Well, I do statistical research, often very technical research that's extremely important to rebut and push back against the secular agenda that flows through our scientific journals, unimpeded almost. And so I just finished a major study showing that when persons go to therapy to change sexual orientation, it doesn't cause them psychological harm. It's been compared to torture by the United Nations and other groups. Somehow it harms people. I've shown that it doesn't harm. In fact, it helps them. It makes them less suicidal and more psychologically stable. So that's one thing that I finished. And I'm just starting a major study on abortion, the outcomes for women following abortion. We have new data that can follow women almost up to completed fertility. So we'll be able to know a lot more things about the outcomes for women who have an abortion, one or more. Most women who have one abortion have more than one.
Yes, they do.
And compare them to women who don't, and that'll help. And all the new fights at the state level about abortion in the country.
Well,
so that's just a couple of things that I do.
Keep up the good work. That's what, RuthInstitute.org, right? Did I get that right?
Yep.
All right, RuthInstitute.org. You can check out it's just some of the great data that's there. I really appreciate the work you do. Let's jump on the phones. We only have a few minutes, so I'll try to grab a few calls. Thanks for dialing in. Daniel is listening in Richmond, Maine. Hi, Daniel.
How you doing?
Hey, we're doing well. Thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say not everybody's leaving the church. I just came back to the church.
That's great.
Yeah, I was raised Catholic.
Yep.
But then when I was a young man, I was addicted to drugs and all that stuff for a long time. And then when I was 34, I ended up getting saved in the Protestant church. Through a long process, I, started studying the Bible back in like 2003 and really going with that. And, God bless me, but what happened to me is, I was at church one day and, the pastor, we were doing, communion that Sunday and, cause it's not every week in the Protestant church, but anyway, we were doing communion, and he said, it's not an exact quote, but basically what he said was, he said, there's nothing magic about this. This is just purely symbolic.
Oh.
And the Holy Spirit, I'm telling you, the Holy Spirit really pricked me in my spirit, and I said, no, this is not right. Mm-hmm. And I had been thinking about coming back to the Catholic Church anyway.
Yep.
And so I ended up going. I went back. That was early November. I think it was like the 13th of November. It was the first time I went back, and I've been going ever since.
Oh, good. Daniel, I'm grateful to hear your story. I'm going to hold it at that point. I'm going to let Father Sullen's comment. But, I just want to re-echo what Daniel said. And I want to put an invitation. Anybody who's been away from the church for a while, come back. Try it out again. If you've gone to confession, you had a bad experience, come back. You're going to find that it's radically different. You're going to be glad you did. I mean, Daniel was on the hunt for truth in a lot of other places, but ultimately he found, his home in the Catholic Church. But, Father, your thoughts.
I just second that. There's a lot of folk that malign the Catholic faith in so many ways, but it's not like what you've heard. It's a place of mercy and grace and redemption. I have personally found it to be that coming in as a Protestant. I know so many Protestants that are on the verge of becoming Catholic, at least in my mind. The deeper you get into your Protestant faith, you get down to the root of it, the more you find that those roots are really Catholic. And so I've stopped calling people Protestants. I just call them future Catholics. Because I think the Lord is drawing us in many ways into his faith in so many ways. Welcome back, my brother. It's a wonderful thing. Well, and we're talking about people reducing their attendance at Mass, and there is a real problem and a real decline. But the truth is that God is always renewing the church. People don't just leave, but they also come. Yeah. And sometimes the more they leave, the more they come. During the darkest eras of the church, we have the brightest lights that start to shine in the saints. So welcome back.
Let's go to Pat in Maine. I'd love to see Maine on board. Pat, good afternoon.
Hey, nice to talk to you guys. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, I'm also a Catholic reaver. Yep. I was away for quite a few years, and what brought me back was the Eucharist.
Amen.
And my question is it possible that a lot of the lapsed Catholics, I know the statistics are pretty poor, though, like 75% of Catholics don't even believe that the Eucharist is the body of Christ.
Hey, Pat, Father, I'll give you the final, I only have about 30 seconds. Patty, I think you're absolutely right. If we truly believe Christ was present, those churches would be overflowing. But Father, final thoughts.
Right. Well, it's true. We are the faith of all faiths that are concrete. We believe that we meet Christ, not just in ideas, but we meet him in reality, in sacraments, in touching one another. So I think that God is going to renew his church. You know, we're in a culture that's against us, but we're becoming hotter and on fire.
I love it. Hey, Father, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Wish we had more time, but I'm out of it for the day. Until tomorrow, everyone. May God bless you. Have a great night.